All right, it's good to see everybody again, and we're going to have our Bhagavad Gita class. Tomorrow is the disappearance day of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, so I'm not sure whether we'll do Bhagavad Gita tomorrow evening or we'll do Gopal Bhatta Goswami in the evening, but in the morning we're going to do Gopal Bhatta Goswami. That's for those of you who want to participate. That's at 6:30 in the morning, East Coast, United States time. 8:30 at night, Australia time, 10:30 at night, New Zealand time, and in Europe, it's 5 hours later, you know, or 6 hours later, it's 12:30 in the middle of the day. So you're welcome to join us. So let's chant Jai Radha Madhava first before we begin. Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari. Gopijana Malabha Kiribaradhahuti. Gopijana Malabha Yirivaradhahuti. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopijana Balagampa Giribadadari. Gopijana Balabha Giribadadhahuti. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Manachari. Yamuna Tira Manachari. Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvitakacharya Olsa Teda Satashi Shimad. His Divine Grace Savaya Chalanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijaya. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijaya. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Kijaya. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijaya. Param Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Gijaya Shishi Radhakrishna Gopa Gopata Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Gijaya Vrindavaram Gijaya Vaturnam Gijaya Jagannatha Swami Gijaya Yamunamai Gijaya Srimati Lasi Devi Gijaya Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijaya Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Ad Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauranga Pacharni Nivisesis Nivadi Paschata Deja Tarni. So Om Meghanat Timananda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuran Meditam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, we're going to go ahead and continue with the Bhagavad Gita study. All right, here we are. And the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and the next text is text 5. Okay, give me 1 second. Okay, this is also a very important text. Aparayamitis tvanyam prakritim virime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayetam daryate jagat apara inferior iyam this itaha besides this two but anyam another prakritim energy vidhi just try to understand me my param superior jiva bhutam comprising the living entities Mahabaho, O Mighty Arm One, Yaya, by whom Idam, this Daryate, is utilized or exploited, Jagat, the material world. Translation, besides these, O Mighty Armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine, which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. So, what Krishna is referring to is the previous verse in which Krishna says and mentions the eightfold material elements, bhumi, rupo, and alo, vayu, kamano. That's earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Remember, we talked about that yesterday. There was the five grosser elements, which are called the pancha mahabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and then mind, intelligence, and false ego. There's the three subtle ones. And that's part of Sankhya philosophy. So besides this material energy, both the gross and subtle material energies, there is us. That means the living entities. We are superior, but we are associating with the inferior, so we act like we are inferior. I'll give you an example. Just like you have a very refined gentleman or a gentle lady, and they start hanging out with the wrong people. You know, someone very educated, whatever, and they start hanging out with the wrong people, intoxication and meeting and everything like that, and they just get degraded by bad association. So in the same way, we are hanging out with the wrong people right now in this material world. And the wrong mentality, and that's the three modes of nature. That's the point. So we're trying to exploit this material nature, and it's not possible, because we are not here. It is an illusion that we think we are matter, that we think we are these bodies, that we think by giving different things to the body, we will be happy. Or mind, you know, mind, intelligence, and false ego. That's the illusion. So we're trying to exploit it. And our relationships are exploitative. You know, even in the name of love, it's exploitation. Because you want to use someone like a tissue. You know, let's say you have a cold and you blow your nose. I mean, nice soft tissue. And then after you're finished blowing your nose on the tissue, you crumple it up, throw it away. And that's the nature of tissues. And, you know, you just go through the whole box. Anyway, that's why people have serial relationships. Serial means boop, 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 one after the other. Because they're trying to exploit this material nature, exploit others, and they're being unsuccessful at it because it's not making them happy. So anyway, so that's us. We're the superior nature, but we're associating with the inferior. We are slumming it. We are dumpster diving. So Prabhupada explains his purport. It is clearly mentioned that the living entities belong to a superior nature energy of the Supreme Lord. The inferior energy is matter manifested in different elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. We mentioned that. Both forms of material nature, namely the gross, means things you can touch or at least understand through secondary evidence, It's earth. Certain things you can touch. Earth, water you can touch. Earth, water, ether, fire you can touch. Air, basically you can touch a little air. And ether, yes, you can understand ether because it's a space. Like the space between me, I don't need to see the microphone. Here's a microphone. Space between my microphone, that's like ether. Space, space. Just like Einstein talks about space. And how space gets bent sometimes. It's really interesting. The bending of space-time is gravity. That's Einstein, right there. So Einstein actually accepts that space and time exist. And they can be bent by some big object, which we call gravity, for the big object. But that's a different thing. You know, big object can bend space-time. So those are the things we can really understand, those five gross elements. And then besides that, you've got the mind. The mind, as I said, is accepting, rejecting things based upon what pleases or displeases it. And the intelligence, that means the vision or the goal that people have in life, and they just control the mind, hopefully. And then you have false ego, I am mine. And that's because we are imitating God, because God has a real ego. He is big, everything, and everything is his. And we are small, and nothing is ours. Everything belongs to Krishna. So that's a hard one to swallow. The living entities are exploiting these inferior energies for different purposes. Are the superior energy of the Supreme Lord? And it is due to this energy that the entire material world functions. Nothing would happen without the light energy. And that's described in the Vedic literatures. And when we're talking about light, we're not just talking about human beings, animals, plants. We're talking sometimes about microscopic entities. Microscopic means things you can't see except with a microscope, or even smaller than that. Inside the atom, there's Krishna. And that is so small, as they say, it's in a nanoscale, that he can't be perceived. So inside every atom. And that's the life force, the energy of the souls, and especially the super soul, keeps everything functioning. Like you talk about the electron that goes around the nucleus. Well, they're not even sure that electron is a particle, or is it energy? You know, anyway, we're not going to get into science right now. But things are happening on the atomic scale. There's motion, there's movement, there's consciousness. Even the scientists have understood that thing about consciousness, like with the uncertainty theory, that your consciousness influences what happens on the nano scale. Nano means smaller than the microscopic scale, nanometers. So there's consciousness. And this consciousness, these living entities, wherever they are, and they're all over the place, they actually activate the matter. It's like you have a machine. So what activates the machine is the electricity, or the gasoline, whatever. But let's talk about electricity. So electricity activates a particular motor and keeps it going. So the electricity of this world is the soul, or are the souls. And the way it's described in the Vedic literatures is that before any of matter and energy, which are interchangeable according to Albert Einstein, when any of the matter became variegated in the beginning, before any of the matter became variegated, the living entities entered into the matter, being put there by Krishna, Saikshita, and then the energy actually became variegated. Before it was just there in a potential state. That potential state, the technical word, is called prajna. It's like a piece of clay. Let's use this example right now. A piece of clay that's in its container is just a lump. It ain't nothing else but a lump of clay. And when a person comes and takes it out of its container and gives it some shape, then it takes on the shape of different things, buildings, people, whatever. You know, people, but it takes on different shapes. So that's what we're talking about right now. The entire material world functions because of life energy. Whatever you see, the energy here, it's life energy. Although it may not appear to be. You know, when you burn something, it doesn't appear to be life energy. Of course, technically, wood is actually life energy, or coal, or any of these things, or oil, things like that. They all come from living entities. And so anyway, things are functioning because of this life energy. The cosmic manifestation has no power to act unless it is moved by the superior energy of the living entity or by Krishna. Energies are always controlled by the energetic. And therefore, the living entities are always controlled by the Lord. They have no independent existence. They are never equally powerful as unintelligent men think. The distinction between the living entities and the Lord is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 87th chapter, text 30. Aparimta dhruvastanu brto yari sarvagatas tarhina sasya teiti nigamo niyamo dhruva netarapta ajanicha yan mayanta avimucha niyan srivavet saman anujana tam yad matam mapadushta teya. O Supreme Eternal, if the embodied living entities were eternal and all-pervading like you, they would not be under your control. In other words, if we were all-pervading, you know, all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-beautiful, and all-famous, we would be independent. And Krishna couldn't tell us what to do at that point. But we are not. We are tiny. We are just being washed away by the waves of time and the waves of karma and the waves of Krishna's external energy. It's like we're a little piece of seaweed that's just being floated around. You know, we're not the ocean. Or we're a drop of water in the ocean. But if the living entities are accepted as minute energies of your lordship, then they are one subject to your supreme control. So once we understand that we're minute energies and we're under control, we're always controlled. What can you control? You can't control your mind. You can't control what's happening in your body right now. You can't. I mean, what's happening inside the body? Do you have any control over it? Maybe a little bit of control. You know, practicing yoga, you can get a little bit more control of the different functions of the body. That's true. You can get a little more control, but absolute control? No. If you had absolute control, you wouldn't need any operations, you wouldn't need so many things if you can control what's happening in your body. Because you can't control what's happening in your own body. How can you control anything else? You know, try your best. And that surrender will make them happy. And we just say, you know, we're being controlled. Let's just go for the ride instead of trying to jump off the roller coaster. That would be pretty stupid. I mentioned many times, one time I went on a roller coaster and I wanted it to end, but there was no question of leaving in the middle. So I was controlled by the track of the roller coaster. In that constitutional position, only can they be controllers. In other words, once you realize that you're a servant of Krishna and act in that particular way, then you've got a lot of more freedom. The whole world is open up. You can do serve Krishna in any way as long as you love him. He says, leave fruit, a little water, just offer everything to me. Great. There's no stereotyped way of serving Krishna. We talked about that before. There's no particular type of food that you have to offer Krishna. It's not that Krishna likes Indian food more than Middle Eastern food, more than American food, more than Chinese food. It's just not there. In fact, most of the Indian food today was not prepared when Krishna was present, because a lot of those things were not in India. Like chili peppers, which are very famous in India. The hot chilies. Jalapenos. Why are they called jalapenos? Because that's South America. Mexico. That's from Mexico. And from South America, that's where the chilies came from. And now you go to India, so many chilies. I remember when we were taking our tour, South India, everywhere you go, they'd have these chilies drying out under the sun, really hot chilies. And at that time, I used to eat the hot chilies. Why do I eat hot chilies? Because at that time, I had a problem with high blood pressure because I was overweight and so many other problems like that. So I ate hot chilies to bring things down, to dilate the arteries and the veins in the body. So anyway, so hot chilies weren't there. Sugar was not there in India. At least sugar cane was not there in India, brought by the British or the Dutch to exploit the Indians, to get them addicted. Tea was not there. Just like you go to India, tea time, everybody's like addicted to tea. That's because the British addicted them to tea. When Lord Chaitanya was present, it's not that Lord Chaitanya had tea time or anything like that. That was crazy. So the things, many things you think are traditional in India are not actually traditional. And even so, even if you find something that's traditional, Krishna doesn't say, you must offer me something that was cooked 5,000 years ago. Not actually cooked 5,000 years ago, that would be pretty stale. But a preparation that was the same as that which was cooked 5,000 years ago. Krishna never says that. Krishna just is happy if you offer him a modern fruit, like a strawberry, as a comparison to a mango. You know, Krishna's happy. Strawberry? Yeah. Didn't have it 5,000 years ago, Krishna said, but sure is nice now. So we have to be careful not to impose some artificial, let's say, cultural standard on Krishna. Krishna is transcultural. That means he transcends all these different cultures we have in the world. Of course, there's certain, let us say, common denominators that in every culture represent someone of high culture. But you know, Krishna is transcultural. Doesn't like Indians more than Americans. Doesn't like Americans more than Chinese. You know, he just loves everybody. He's not racist, sexist, nationalist. He's just like Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, he says in the Gita. I'm equal to everybody. That's it. Krishna's the real egalitarian person. That's why we love him. Whereas you find so many other depictions of God as being a little less egalitarian or practically as a racist almost. That's not God. So therefore, men with limited knowledge who advocate the monistic theory that God and living entities are equal in all respects are actually guided by faulty and polluted opinion. Monistic means we are God, God is the same, or God is an illusion, everything is one, mano, like mano means one. The Supreme Lord Krishna is the only controller, and all living entities are controlled by him all the time. You are controlled by him, or by his energies, which is basically by him. These living entities are a superior energy, that's us, because the quality of their existence is one and the same with the Supreme. But they are never equal to the Lord in quantity of power, minute power. While exploiting the gross and subtle inferior energy, that's the earth, water, fire, air, ego, mind, intelligence, the ego, the superior energy, that's us, forgets his real spiritual mind and intelligence. This forgetfulness is due to the influence of matter upon the living entity. Bad association. So when we decide to turn our face away from Krishna, the only alternative is bad association. Just let's say we have some good parents and they say, please, don't go to the bar tonight. Don't go get drunk with your friends. Don't take intoxication. Don't go, whatever. And then we say, nah, I'm an adult. I'm over 18. I can do what I want. And so with that rebellious mood, we go and associate with those people who are drunkards or whatever they are. They bought cheese. And then we become like them. So it's by the influence of the illusory material energy, the association, karnam gunas sangash, the gunas, goodness, passion, ignorance, and the people who exude those modes. Like we were talking about, people who exude the virus, and you catch the virus. They simply breathe, and you're 2 feet away, ha, and you've got the virus. So it's the same thing. So one has to be very careful, wear a mask. Where's my mask? When you go out in Maya, even after the virus, wear a mask to protect yourself. Krishna consciousness, not this thing. This thing's not going to protect you from Maya. I'll tell you one funny story. Once upon a time, when the first devotees took sannyas, they asked Prabhupada, or they were speculating amongst themselves before they asked Prabhupada, they speculated amongst themselves what the cape of a sannyasi is meant for. What do you see? It's a cape. It's not a Superman cape. What the cape of a sannyasi is meant for. So some devotees thought, well, it's to protect you from Maya. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, if a cloth can protect you from Maya, that's powerful. Do you have to, like, say certain mantras over the cloth or something like that? And then there were other devotees who had another philosophy that, I don't know, some of you may have noticed that some of us chant the Gayatri Mantra. We have a thread like that. Or we chant, the ladies chant on their fingers, and they cover their hands with cloth at the same time, which is the ritual. And so the question is, why do they do that? And they said, well, because if you don't do that, some demon will come and steal your mantra. Wow, that's also a very powerful cloth. This is better than the armor the knights used to use in the Middle Ages. Medieval ages, to protect us from Maya. Wow, protect us from the modes of nature. Maybe I should wear a burqa, and that would be a complete success in protecting me from Maya. No, it won't protect you from Maya. It's actually funny that people have all these different things they dream up. Actually, this cloth of the sannyasi is not for collecting, protecting yourself from Maya, but originally it was for collecting. You know, when a sannyasi was out going door to door, and he wanted something to eat. So basically, it's like a different version of a begging bowl. It's called a begging cloth. Like in Buddhism, they have a begging bowl. And people put eatables into the bowl. Sometimes they put eatables that shouldn't be eaten into the bowl. So sannyasi goes out with the cloth and says, Bhikshu, you know, please give me something. And someone throws in a chapati, throws in a piece of pizza or something like that. And the sannyasi is happy. He goes to so many people's houses. He collects a lot. That's why you need a big cloth. So that's what cloth is there. So in other words, to protect ourselves from the influence of Krishna's illusory energy, we have to be very careful not to have bad association or just to minimize these associations. And conversely, to have good association. So when the living entity becomes free from the influence of the illusory material energy, he attains the stage of mukti, or liberation. The false ego, under the influence of material illusion, this is the false ego, the highest aspect of the material elements, thinks, I am matter, and material acquisitions are mine. It's my car, my family, my computer, my whatever else, my home. And then we become very defensive. Like the story, one of the stories we read in the Bhagavatam recently was the story of the Kaliya serpent, who thought that his section of the Yamuna River was his, not Krishna's. And therefore, anyone who came in near him got poisoned. That was because in his last life, he was a sage, and he had a cave, and he wouldn't let any other sage into his cave. So you got to be careful. It's I and mine. Everything belongs to Krishna. Of course, you take care of it because it belongs to Krishna. His actual position is realized when he is liberated from all material ideas, including the conception of becoming one in all respects with God. Definitely not God. Therefore, one may conclude that the Gita confirms that a living entity be only one of the multi-energies of Krishna, and when this energy is freed from material contamination, it becomes fully Krishna conscious, so it's liberated. It's like getting out of prison. It's like, if you ever play this game, Monopoly, there's this like card you get out of prison or something like that. Don't pass go, get out of prison. Or go pass go, get out of prison. So we have this get out of prison card that Srila Prabhupada has given us. And then we're free, we're happy. We're not depressed anymore. I mean, otherwise in this material world, I mean, just like my mother used to tell me, I used to tell my mother, that in Krishna consciousness, you can be happy all the time. And she said, that's not natural. You got to take the good with the bad. And I said, no, you can be happy all the time. And even your sadness in Krishna consciousness is a manifestation of spiritual ecstasy. All right, next verse. Etadyanini bhutani sarvani chupadarya Angritsnasya Jagata Bhagava Pralayastata. Etat. These two natures, Yonini, whose source of birth, Bhutani, everything created, Sarvani, all, iti thus, Upadarya no aham I, Kritsnasya, all inclusive Jagataha of the world, Bhagava, the source of manifestation, Pralaya, Annihilashtata, as well as. All created beings have their source in these two natures. Material nature and the spiritual nature. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both its origin and dissolution. In other words, everything comes from Krishna. We're parts and parcels of Krishna. The material energy comes from Krishna. Krishna's Vishnu Tattva expansions come from him. All the planets come from him. The spiritual world comes from him. He's the source of everything. Later on, we'll hear this in the Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhu. It means aham, I, sarvasya, all, prabhu. Yeah, I'm the source of everything. Not only is the source, but he's controlling everything too. You know, we can be the source of some different things, but we can't control them. We can be the creator of something very small, but we can't control it. All of it. So Krishna's both the origin, the source, and he just dissolves. It's like a play for him. You understand? You just pick up your pieces and play them, then you put them back in the little box when you're finished, if you're a kid. So Krishna's, everything is Krishna's lila. Of course, we are not just pieces. You know, we have feelings too. And Krishna loves us, is very concerned with us. But ultimately, that's who we come from, Krishna. Purport, everything that exists is a product of matter and spirit. Ain't nothing else but matter and spirit. Spirit is the basic field of creation, and matter is created by spirit. Simple, which we mentioned before. Matter is created by spirit, it's inspired by spirit, it's put into motion by spirit, it's again annihilated by spirit. Spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. Rather, this material world is manifested only on the basis of spiritual energy. We talked about that. This material body is developed because spirit is present within matter. A child grows gradually to boyhood and then to manhood because that superior energy spirit soul is present. Similarly, the entire cosmic manifestation of the gigantic universe is developed because the presence of the super soul, Vishnu. In other words, he's the soul of the universe, not only the soul in your heart, the super soul in your heart, but he's the soul of the whole universe. Therefore, spirit and matter, which combine to manifest this gigantic universal form, that means this creation, all the things going on, are originally two energies of the Lord. And consequently, the Lord is the original cause of everything. A fragmental part and parcel of the Lord, namely the living entity, may be the cause of a big skyscraper, a big factory, or even a big city, but he cannot be the cause of a big universe. That is impossible. We can create something little. The cause of the big, and the person who created us is Krishna. So ultimately, Krishna is the cause of all causes. There are actually intermediate causes, but the ultimate cause that's beyond time, that is hard to conceive. How something can be on time, because when you're talking about cause and effect, you're talking about a time-bound relationship. Like, my parents gave birth to this body that I have, it's time-bound, and that happened, God knows how many years ago. Actually, doing how many years? I hate to admit it, 1949, many, many years ago. And then after that, my father passed away. So these are all time-bound things, things that cause this body to exist. And today I ate some prasadam. And that's time-bound. You know, I did that previously. And in the future, I'll do something different. So, but Krishna is beyond time. Can you imagine? I don't know what that means. I mean, who could tell what that means, being here in the material world? But I can understand philosophically, but not practically. The cause of the big universe is the big soul, or super soul. And Krishna the Supreme is the cause of both the big and small souls. Therefore, he is the original cause of all causes. This is confirmed in the Katha Upanishad 2.2.13, Nichan Nichanam, Chaitanas Chaitanam. Actually, that's another very important verse. Eko Bahunam Yavadarati Kama, which means there are many eternal living entities, and there is one supreme eternal living entity. And that supreme eternal living entity, the big one, is maintaining all the plural living entities. That's us. Very important verse from the Upanishads. Here's another like key verse in the Bhagavad Gita. We're running into so many key verses today. Mata paratarham nanyat kinchid asti stananjaya mayasaramidam proktam sutre marigana niva. Mataha beyond me paratarham superior na nat anyat kinchit anything else asti there is stananjaya conqueror of wealth mayi in me sarvam all that be idam which we see, proktam is strung, sutre on a thread, mani, gana, pearls, eva, like. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Now, the interesting thing about this particular metaphor, like pearls strung on a thread, is that if they're strung real tight on a thread, you don't see the thread. But you understand, indirectly, there must be a thread, even though you don't see it. It's like consciousness. You don't see it. But by secondary evidence, because all the pearls are just staying there in the air and they bend, they're not glued together. I mean, just use your brain. If you see pearls, they can bend and make a little necklace or make a bracelet. Then you understand something is holding, there's a thread underneath. So because everything is functioning in such an amazing fashion, we've mentioned many times before, when you go into the microbiological realm, then you'll see so many amazing coordinated things happening within the cell. Not only in the nucleus, but all over the cell, there's all these different mechanisms. It's more complicated than all the cities of the world put together. And so, it doesn't take much of a brain to understand that someone designed it. When something is absolutely so complex, it could not have happened by chance. Or even if you see pearls on a thread, let's go back to that. Okay, the pearls on a thread just happened to be on a thread. Nobody put them on a thread. They just happened to be on a thread. No machine put them on a thread. It's just like, you know, by the laws of chance, the pearls popped out of the oysters, because that's where pearls come from, unless you're in Vrindavan. And then pearls come from pearl trees in Vrindavan. But that's an exception, and you have to be Krishna to be able to do that. So let's say you see a pearl necklace. You say, no one did it. You know, just somehow or other, you know, the pearls just came. They popped out of the oysters, and they arranged themselves by the laws of probability, even though it's so improbable, like 10 to the minus 20 billion that pearls, that, how many pearls in a pearl necklace? Yeah, who knows? Maybe 100, 200. Okay, let's say 200. So all those pearls arrange themselves, and they arrange as something resembling a string would be manifest. And that, there would be holes in each and every one of those pearls. That's pretty amazing. If you think about it, say this pearl necklace just happened automatically, that is the stupidest statement you've ever heard. But then you take something that's infinitely much more complex and regulated, such as the cell, one cell, and you say it happened by chance. You are nuts, baby. That's it. You are nuts. So just by the very existence of this material world and the observation of how it's functioning, you have to come to the conclusion that there's a designer. And if you don't, if you're really determined to avoid the facts. You're like a particular president of a particular country, whereas the facts don't matter. The facts are false news. Crazy. And this whole world is crazy, and people who don't accept the existence of God are even crazier. So purport. There's a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth, that's Sat, is personal or impersonal. As far as the Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, and this is confirmed in every step in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person, that the personality of Godhead is the Supreme Absolute Truth, and is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha. That is, Krishna's Supreme Controller, and he's a body made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. That's what it says. The Supreme Absolute Truth Personality of God is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the original Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. So if you want to be happy, you get in touch with the form of bliss, and that's Krishna and Radha. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalists, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Shveta Shvata Upanishad. They misinterpret it. The 3:10. Tato yad utarataram tadarupam anamayam yahitad viduram taste bhavanti atetare dukham ivapiyanti. In the material world, Brahma, the primeval living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is transcendence, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental, but those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. This is because it's mentioned that the Supreme Absolute Truth has no material form, arupam. Is the word used. Obviously, if he had a material form, he wouldn't be God. He'd be just like one of us. So, actually, probably comment on this in the next paragraph. Notice that. The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupam. But this arupam is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge as described in the Brahma Samhita quoted above. Other verses in the Shveta Shvata Upanishad, at the 3:8-9, substantiate this as follows. And more verses. Vedaham etam purusham mahantam adityavarnam tamasa parastat tam eva viditvati mrityum eti nanya patavindache vinjate yanaya yasmat param na param asti kinchit yasmannani yoyo jayo sti kinchit riksha hivastabdo divitis tachikas tenedam purnam purushena sarvam. I know that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness. Only he who knows him can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There's no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. Pretty clear. Next verse. There's no truth superior to that Supreme Person because he is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest. And he is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree and illumines the transcendental sky, and as a tree spreads its roots, he spreads his extensive energies. From these verses, one concludes that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-pervading by his multi-energies, both material and spiritual. And we will read text 8, which is another important text. Wow, chock full of important texts. Rasso ham apsukuntia prabhasvi shashi suri o panavasa valide shoes shabda ke purusham nushu. Rasa taste the ham I apsu in water kuntia, son of Kunti, prabhava the light, asmi I am, shashi suri o, of the moon and sun, panavaha. The three letters, om, that's called the pranava. Sarva and all, vedishu in the Vedas, shabdaha. Sound vibration, K in the ether, let me just, space. Aparisham, ability, and Rishu, in men. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water. So you drink water, you better understand that. I actually probably said one time, if you're really a drunkard, you can be partially Krishna conscious and understand that Krishna's the taste. And channel Krishna between each sip. The light of the sun and the moon, the syllable om and the Vedic mantras, I am the sound in ether. And the ability in man. So Prabhupada explains, this verse explains how the Supreme Lord is all-pervasive by his diverse material and spiritual energies. The Supreme Lord can be preliminarily perceived by his different energies, and in this way he is realized impersonally. Like you find in many primitive cultures, they worship different energies of the Lord, like the sun and the moon and the weather and the lightning. As the demigod in the sun is a person perceived by his all-pervading energy, the sunshine, so the Lord, through his eternal abode, although in his eternal abode, is perceived by his all-pervading diffusive energies. The taste of water is the active principle of water. No one likes to drink seawater because the pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on the purity of the taste, and this pure taste is one of the energies of the Lord. So think about that next time you drink water. The impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste, and the personalist also glorifies the Lord for kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. That is the way of perceiving the Supreme. Practically speaking, there is no conflict between personalism and impersonalism. There's none, and there is, because that. The conflict is in the ultimate goal. One who knows God knows that the impersonal conception and the personal conception are simultaneously present in everything, and there is no contradiction. In other words, Krishna has impersonal energy and personal energy. Krishna is spread everywhere, and also he stays in his abode, which is Goloka Vrindavan. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya established his sublime doctrine, Achincha Bheda and Abheda Tattva, simultaneous one and different. So Krishna is everything and also different than everything simultaneously. And we'll run into this in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, more explicitly described. The light of the sun and moon is also originally emanating from the Brahmajyoti, which is the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, and pranava, or the Omkara transcendental sound, in the beginning of every Vedic hymn addresses the Supreme Lord. Actually, it means Radha Krishna and the living entities. It's the same thing as saying Hare Krishna. Because the impersonalists are very much afraid of addressing the Supreme Lord Krishna by his innumerable names, they prefer to vibrate the transcendental sound, Omkara, Omkara, Omkara. It's not Omkara, it's Omkara. But they do not realize that Omkara, Omkara, is the sound representation of Krishna. The jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness extends everywhere, and one who knows Krishna consciousness is blessed. Those who do not know Krishna are an illusion. And so knowledge of Krishna is liberation, and ignorance of him is bondage. So get your knowledge. So anyway, so Omkara, A-U-M, is basically Radha and Krishna, the living entity. It's everything complete is there in the word. And that's why people are tricked into chanting Krishna's name. One of his names is Om. But of course, the name Krishna is actually much more effective in this day and age, and that's the Yuga Dharma. But if you can't chant Krishna, you can chant Om. You can chant any name of the Absolute that's a bona fide name of the Absolute. But don't chant I Am. That is not the name of the Absolute. That's the introduction to the Absolute when he comes to see you. You say, I am Krishna. And then you say, oh, I am must be your first name, Krishna must be your last name. That's stupid. Don't be stupid. Be intelligent. All right, so then we can take some questions. And tomorrow we'll continue with text 9. So we will stop our sharing here and allow our participants to ask some questions. All right. You are officially allowed to ask questions now, my dear participants. Anybody have any questions? Oops. What happened here? I hope I can hear you. Wait a second. I want to make sure I can hear. Sometimes it sounds. Okay, who has a question? Well, I hear myself. Wait a second. Okay, who has a question? Anybody? No. Amazing. Nobody has a question. I don't see anybody asking questions. Look at all you nice devotees. So, Dharma, you have a question? No, I guess it's too cold to ask a question.
Gurudev, I was just thinking about like Krishna being in charge of everything, and Maya is so strong. And the only way that, like, you know, as you were saying, that sort of, no, nothing can protect us from Maya. Maya is so, so strong with the three modes of material nature. So our only hope, our only wish is that we can just take shelter of the glories of Hare Krishna mantra and chant that so sincerely that we can be protected.
That's the only way. As soon as we forget Krishna, there's immediately Maya. The definition of Maya actually is the absence of Krishna. Mm-hmm. You know that verse, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Andhakar. Mm-hmm. Krishna's the sun. Maya means darkness. Mm-hmm. So the absence of Krishna is Maya or illusion. Mm-hmm. So if we keep remembering Krishna 24 hours a day, you know, we go to sleep, we can chant ourselves to sleep, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Make believe you're in Bhagavatam class, then you'll really fall asleep quickly. So anyway.
Yes.
I could not fall asleep if I was listening to Prabhupada. That'd be impossible. Some devotees put Prabhupada on at night, and I couldn't do that. I would just get so excited, I'd jump out of bed and start dancing. Mm-hmm. So, there's a baby in my class. Tell him to surrender. All right. Anyway, so it's interesting. Champa Galata has she's a grandmother. Great grandmother. No, not great grandmother. So, all right. So, good. So, who else has a question? I'm looking at all these nice devotees. Sumukh, you don't have a question.
I have a question.
Okay. Oh, Champaka. Okay. Okay, what's the question?
How you're on a roller coaster and being basically controlled by that. And it's making me think of the modes of nature and how, you know, if we basically choose a mode of nature, we then get controlled by that. So are the modes of nature like the roller coaster that you're just under its control for a certain amount of time, and it just takes the time it takes for you to get off?
Well, if you chant Hare Krishna, it's like the roller coaster stops. it's just like if you're on a roller coaster and you just say, "Help! Help! I'm having a heart attack." Then they'll stop it and take you off of it. But you really got, normally you can't get off of it unless you really call out for the person controlling the roller coaster. I mean, when I got on the roller coaster, I wanted to stop and never stop.
Because it does seem like even though we have a desire to break free, that it's just a process. It's a journey and it can take so long.
Yep. It's like a boat that keeps rocking. And I probably gave the example, that boat example. And sometimes because it's rocking so much, we just want to get off because we're hanging off the side of the boat, vomiting. I remember when I was young, I mean, we always had boats. My parents always had boats. And my first experience of going out in the ocean in a, you know, rather small boat, it was like a 40-foot boat, which is not an ocean liner. And that's why I don't go on cruises when the devotees go on cruises, because I'm traumatized. So everybody else thinks it's romantic to go on a cruise. I don't, because I spend so much time in the ocean on a boat. And so the boat's rocking from side to side, and there I am, hanging off the side, getting rid of all the food that I just ate. So the material world is like that. And so sometimes we just want to jump off the boat of Krishna consciousness. Because in the beginning, the boat, our Krishna consciousness in our mind is just rocking from side to side. But we just have to use our intelligence and figure out things will get better. Mm-hmm. Things will get better. So it's true. Actually, it's progressing Krishna consciousness. It doesn't rock so much. Mm-hmm. The material ocean of emotions is really something. Emotions. Whew. I mean, it's good to have emotions. I'm not saying that you should be all psychopaths, but to be pushed around by emotions. Oh my God. Anger, fear, grief, hankering. I mean, it's just like, it's too much. Too much. Anyway, so on that happy note, any other questions? Just got to hang on to the boat. Yes, Radha Padma.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Senses, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gurudev, if we are superior energy of Krishna, how is it that we have taste for lower, or we have lower taste?
Because we decided exactly what I talked about before. Like if you were, let's say you were born in a very rich family and you're very cultured and everything like that, you're superior nature. You know, you're very, very cultured. You speak perfect Hindi. You have a PhD from the university or whatever, you know. And you just like, with the highest echelon of society. And then all of a sudden, one day you decide to go to the bar and just hang out with the wrong people. Even though we have a superior nature, we still have the free will to decide to hang out with whoever we want to hang out with. You know, it's attractive. You know, there's certain things that are attractive. Just like even now because of this COVID-19 thing, people definitely know that if you hang out in crowds, and I'm talking about America, because New Zealand, you've conquered COVID-19. You're also fortunate. But you probably just die because of the cold instead of COVID-19 anyway.
It's coming back, Guru Maharaj.
It's coming back. All right, so people in America, they know, but in spite of all that knowledge, they're all I mean, in our July 4th weekend, which is our day of independence, et cetera, like that, they're all at the beach, like practically touching each other and going to political rallies, you know, this close to each other. I mean, it's just like they know better. They know that the virus is there. And many of them have relatives that have died from the virus, yet they still do it. That's the amazing thing. The people who are intelligent don't do it. Like today I had to go to the bank to make some arrangement. So before I could go to the bank, I had to, on the internet, make an appointment. And then there was a guard at the door. They wouldn't let me in the door. I had to show them my appointment, wear a mask, talk to the person at the desk behind a glass piece, you know, glass and everything like that. And even my secretary wasn't allowed in at the same time to sign certain papers. And so it was just like, wow, these people are serious. So, but they, people know about it, and yet still, especially the Americans, I mean, I don't want to criticize Americans, because they're being egged on by some political leaders. They just like go and risk their lives. Just what? To hang out in a crowd and cheer or something like that? It's just like, I mean, risking your life to please Krishna is one thing, but risking your life for no purpose whatsoever. And so people know better and they do it anyway. And Krishna's, Arjuna asked that question, by what is one impelled to act as if by force? And basically Krishna answers the mode of passion. He says, with lust only, impelled by the mode of passion, which later is transformed into wrath. So you actually see that when people go out for these things, they actually become angry after a while. And some people get so angry that they're being asked to wear masks that they kill the people who are asking them to wear masks. This happens in America. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. People know it's the best thing, yet they don't do it. People know another thing, you know, forget about the virus. People know that smoking cigarettes is going to give you cancer. On every package, it says this cigarette smoking is dangerous to your health and is going to kill you and give you whatever disease, you know, cancer, liver disease, whatever disease it gives you. People know drinking liquor. They know. I mean, everybody knows you drink liquor. I mean, everybody except maybe a few people, that you get cirrhosis of the liver. But they do it anyway. So you find people in knowledge do things that they know are bad for them because they're forced to act by the association of the modes of nature. Because they have bad association. Just like I mentioned the other day, we have some workers here. We're doing construction on the property. They're nice guys. They're doing construction and I give them prasadam and I talk to them and they like me and I like them. And they're okay when they're here. But sometimes we can get them to stop smoking. But they're okay when they're here. But as soon as the weekend comes, I hear about how they had to go to the hospital, and this and that. You know, they just lose it. So when they have good association, you know, here at the temple, they start to gravitate, they take prasadam, and, you know, they tell me, I said, how are you doing? You really got to stop drinking, you got to stop doing this. And they said, yes, you're right, I'm doing much better now. But as soon as they get back into bad association, it just like goes downhill. It's all based on association. And you choose your association, you choose what you do. We're responsible. Even a person of knowledge is forced to act. They take bad association. That's why you got to be careful who you hang out with, who your friends are. Because they can influence, you can get influenced. I mean, if you just like, I was talking the other day that, you know, one of my best friend was Bhakti Churumar. So that's a good association. That's good association. I was fortunate. You know, he was a great devotee. Another great devotee, God brothers. That's been my association all these years. I don't think I've so much associated with anybody else besides Krishna conscious people. I mean, I know people, you know, I'm friendly with everybody and I like everybody, but association. Okay. I think we have to end now. We'll see everybody tomorrow.
Mm.
Everybody pray for our workers that they get out of the mode of ignorance and can get back to work. It's already Wednesday, and three of them have not shown up because of last weekend. That's how bad it is. Can you imagine that? Because last weekend was a real blowout. It's the 4th of July. The day, 4th of July is the celebration of independence.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them are independent from the actions of the material energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just an opportunity to get drunk and do whatever else. And it's still, I was told tomorrow they're coming. Tomorrow is Thursday. So maybe we'll have them for Thursday and Friday. Then the weekend comes again. And it's more time for getting drunk and whatever. Can you imagine living a life like that? And the contractor that we're using, he's very nice. He's a devotee. He's from Punjab. He told me, he said, he doesn't know what to do with these people. He says, the only time they'll come and work is because when they run out of money. It's like in Fiji, the devotees told me that there's that problem with certain elements of the population in Fiji, that they get some money and they spend it the same day.
Yeah.
So they run out of money. You know, he pays them, and they make good money here. These contractors, they make like $20-$25 an hour each, you know, just a worker, American dollars an hour. But they run out of money. They get paid, let's say, for the week, you know, $1,000 or whatever. And then the next morning, they're asking for a loan against their next paycheck. And this is, I'm sure you have people like that in every country. It's just unbelievable. It's a mode of ignorance.
Mm.
And then, you know, I'm praying for them. But, you know, it's just like, how to get them out of that mire. We need Krishna consciousness. I mean, this world needs Krishna consciousness. Okay, on that happy note. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda.
Jai. Jai.